together in a small group together. And the first guy said, look, I'm so happy I finally can tell what's going on, man. I've had this pornography addiction, and I've got this lust, and I've got all these issues, and I'm so glad to get this off my chest. The next guy said, well, you know, I've got this gambling addiction. I've wrecked our finances. I've spent all of our money. Third guy says, man, I got this gossip addiction. I can't wait to get out of here. So, just can't wait to leave. So you have to choose your friends carefully, everybody. So, I thought I would take a few moments in this final session. And once again, let me say, if there's any time I can ever serve any of you in any way, we would be honored to do it with our resources. Again, please, if you use it, a guy just said he watches my messages and has stolen every one of them. I said, you can't steal them if we're giving them away. So there, you just take it, preach it better. If we have a resource, if you make it better, just all I ask is to tell us what you did to make it better, and we'll change the, you know, to make it better with you. So I think one of the things I love about the body of Christ today is the collaboration we have. Amen, everybody. So that did not exist 20, 30 years ago, and God's doing a new thing in the church, and I'm grateful for it. I thought I'd spend a few minutes and give you the second half of the vision. So we have weekend services that lost people love to attend, and we have small groups that pastor people and help people through their freedom issues by just creating an environment where they can be honest and they can take next steps. And then, of course, we do have a growth track and a dream team. And really, the dream team is the completion of the growth track. And I wanted to take just a few moments. And again, most pastors actually want that piece of the vision. I would encourage you have to have all four parts of God's vision to get lost people saved people pastored, pastored people discipled people mobilized. The local church is not the hope of the world. The local church mobilized is the hope of the world. We need our people doing something to impact our communities, all right? So we have to get our people mobilized. And as Pastor Paul does so beautifully, and I want to try to do the same thing, it's the why that drives the what. So let me just give you the whys behind it, and then I'll get into the weeds and give you what we do. And this is, if there's ever an area that you do not have to do it this way, it's on this stuff. The principles need to be accomplished, but even as they've done here, they have taken the principles of Growth Track and get people serving and contextualized it into their own set of next steps here at Life. And so I would encourage you to do the same thing. But I do believe, and I want to just make a few why statements, that it is the biblical model for pastors to equip into people to minister. So we really, pastors do too much ministry. Okay? So I tell our staff, if I catch you doing ministry, I'll fire you. Because your job, he gave some to be pastors to equip the saints to do the ministry, Ephesians 4 says. So I don't hire people to do jobs. I hire people to lead teams of people who are called to do something. So I want them equipping people. The number one thing that we measure our team with is their equipping abilities, the teams that they build, because the ministry belongs to the people in our church, not to us. Can I hear a better amen? Yeah. This is God's word. This is Ephesians chapter 4. He gave some of us, not everybody's a pastor, he gave some of us that distinction. And it's very clear what our function is, and that is to equip the saints, the people, to do the work of the ministry. You really got to get that mindset inside of your heart. The second why is behind why people need to go through a growth track and get on a team is that I just simply want to say it this way. It's profound and it's so simple. People need to be needed. So let me say it this way. They come to your churches for one reason. They stay for a completely different reason. So they'll come because they're in trouble or they're looking for God or they've heard about your preaching. But honestly, your preaching cannot keep people in church. And I can prove it because the best preachers don't have the best churches. So if you look around, I'm an example of that one, right? So, I mean, they don't have the best churches. That people stay. They come for one reason. They stay for two reasons. They stay because everybody needs to be needed and everybody needs to be known. When they're needed and known, you close the back door. It's an absolute fact. I'm challenged. So small groups settles the known factor. When I have my friends there, I'll stay. I have community. I have real authentic community in the big group. But also, they stay when they feel like they're needed. And I believe we have to create a place for people to be needed. The last why that I want to give you is I personally believe, and I can prove it scientifically, even in a secular scientific study, that people inherently have a need to make a difference. So even if they're not Christians, God has already put inside of the human heart the need to leave your legacy. So it's already there. So let me say it this way, pastors. You don't even have to convince them of that. You don't have to preach them, hey, you need to do something that matters. Listen to me. They already want to. It is already inside of the human heart, lost or saved, to make a difference. Now, sociologist Maslow made it famous. If you ever studied Maslow's hierarchy of needs, his theory, his psychological theory was that needs drive behavior. That was his whole thesis. So if you'll find out what a person needs, they're automatically going to do it. So you have a need to stay alive, so you're breathing. That's the first need that every person is meeting right now is your physical needs. You have a need to stay alive, so you eat, you breathe, you get shelter, etc. You get warmth, you go to sleep. You're meeting, your needs are driving your behavior. So he figured that people have basic needs, but they graduate to bigger needs. In his first pass of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, he discovered that there were five basic needs that every person has, so therefore, every person will automatically pursue. They're going to go after these. After he died and sociologists continued to study it, they actually found three more that were missing. So the current list that sociologists have accepted as the basic needs of the human heart is that there's eight of them. Would you like to know what eight they are? The first one is physical needs. I've already given you that one. The second one is safety needs. You have a need for law and order and limits and stability. So that's why you lock your doors and you buy insurance. The third is you have love needs. And that's what drives all of us toward relationships. We all need to be loved. So love makes you get in relationships. The fourth is what he called esteem needs. You have the need to be complimented. You have a need for your clothes to look good, your hair to look good. You have this. And by the way, those are very different based on guys and girls, right? So I'm just telling you, a woman can be drop dead gorgeous and find a flaw. A man can be ugly and go, "What's up? Look at you, baby." So it's just very different. So the fifth one is a new one. If you want to mark this one, this is one of the three new ones. And the fifth one, they call them cognitive needs. It's why you came to this masterclass, because you have a need to know stuff. It's why you'll watch a documentary, because you have a need to learn. And that's why we like Discovery Channel, because we want to see whales in their migrations. And that's in there, okay? The sixth is what they call aesthetic needs. And that's the need for things to be beautiful. That's why we put things on stage and have lights and burn candles and admire sunsets. That's why we paint. That's why we, okay, you understand that. It's aesthetic needs. The seventh one was what they thought was the highest one. So this was Maslow's original fifth and highest. It's not the highest. Maslow called it self-actualization. I know it's a fancy psychological word, but it means we win. The All Blacks are the best. See, you already felt it. There it was, right? And you have a need to win. On the way to masterclass today, I was following Pastor Paul in my car with my amazing, none like him, driver and personal assistant this entire week, Mr. Alan Mills, everybody. Give him a hand, everybody. He's just the best of the best. And we pulled up to a light together, and Pastor Paul just looked at us like, "You ready to go?" And he challenged us. So I said, "Al, let me tell you what to do. Hold back and act like you don't care to race them. At the last minute, we're going to bust a move on Pastor Paul, all right?" But we got out in front, and Alan says, "I know which way he's going to go, and we're going to take a different road, and we're going to get there first." And I said, "You are my hero. I love you, right?" And we got here, our car had already been parked, and we're just standing out in front. Some of y'all saw us just standing out from the church. Here comes Pastor Paul driving in, we're like, "What's up, my brother?" You know, we just, all right. It's lots of fun. Because we had this need, and need drove our behavior to break all kind of laws. Just so, all right. Sorry, Alan. So, but we had, everyone has this need. But check it out. They thought that was the highest. When you win, when you make all the money you wanted, when you have the house you wanted, the car you wanted, when you have the job you wanted, when you win, you've hit the highest. They have discovered, sociologists, not Christians, secular sociologists found out there's an eighth, and it's higher than winning. And they call it transcendence. And it means when your life goes beyond yourself. And they found out that human beings will live their lives to pursue transcendence. Everybody wants to die and their name ended up on a building, or they want impacted by a person, or that there's this, like, it's the highest itch that can be scratched is make a difference, which is why, by the way, we made our fourth purpose of our church. Know God, find freedom, discover purpose. Everybody already wants to make a difference, but you can't make a difference if you don't discover your purpose. You can't discover your purpose until you find some freedom. You'll never find freedom without knowing God. So I basically tease them into where I know they want to go and tell them you can only get there if you follow God. That's why I love my job. They can't even get there without the God who created them. We have the best job in the world because lost people already want something that only God can deliver them. And you have the secret to it. So I don't even talk people into it. I dare them to come find it. And I tell them, go try to be transcendent without God. You'll be back. And they know. They inherently know. God has set eternity into the hearts of men. Ecclesiastes says, so it's already there. So because of that, that's why having a process, a clear process, pathway, and a landing point for people to serve isn't because you need more people to help in children's church. You can't let the motivation be your needs. The motivation needs to be their needs. Come on, I'm helping you out a whole lot right here, right? And so if you'll understand the why, you'll start communicating it differently. In other words, you need me. I don't need you. And here's how I actually say it. I say, look, if you got on the dream team, the church would be better. But it's working pretty well without you. And I'm not telling you this because I need you to serve. I'm telling you this because you need it. That you'll never be happy until you're doing something that makes a difference. In fact, that was the true secret. Let me give you another little nugget. This is going to help you so much, pastors. Just like preach this. Some of you preachers can preach this better than I can. The best way to pastor somebody is not to help them through their problems. The best way to pastor someone is to give them something in their life bigger than their problems. So that's why Paul said, I am hard pressed on every side, but it's not bothering me. I'm perplexed, but I'm not in despair. Why, Paul? Please tell us. Well, he does. Because I have my eyes fixed not on these problems. I have my eyes fixed on the unseen things. The unseen are eternal. These seen things are temporary. So they're there, but I'm so focused on, I consider my life worth nothing to me except I finish the race and the call that God has given me. And really, he had problems, y'all. They didn't bother him. He lists his problems in 2 Corinthians 11. I mean, like, I'm shipwrecked, I'm snake bit, I'm beaten with rods. Three times the 39 lashes that Jesus got, he got them five times. So he was just healing from the last set of lashes, and he gets it again. And he calls them light and momentary troubles. No, they weren't. They were hard and lasted a long time. They were the very opposite of that. He says, but no, they feel light and momentary because I have my eyes fixed on something else. I'm telling you, the best gift you give people is something to live for bigger than their problems. The best way to pastor someone is don't even talk about all their problems that long. Like, I'll pray for you, but what you need is something to focus on bigger than your problems. In fact, I have what I call my problems theory, and here it is. They don't go away. And as soon as you solve one, another one pops up. Is anybody else on the same earth I'm on? Anybody else, right? So, but the happiest people I know aren't the people without problems. The happiest people I know who have something to live for. Are y'all following this, everybody? So I just tell people, I say, look, you need us. You need this. You'll only be happy. Life will only make sense when you're doing something so that you lay your head down at night and think, my goodness, because I sat in that chair behind that camera for hours and no one even knows my name, but I lay my head down tonight knowing that I facilitated 400 pastors getting God's word, and their church is going to be better. And you, ma'am, I don't know, which, can you tell me, just say your name real loud out from the camera. Kim? Are you Kim? So I'm going to honor you because you're doing what you were called to do. And I want you to lay your head down tonight thinking, you know, Chris spoke, but it wouldn't have worked if I wouldn't have been on the camera. You know, I had to be there, right? And I got it to other people, and you, ma'am, you made just as much a difference as I did because you were doing your role. Now you can see that's so when you do that, everybody's like, well, how do I get on the team? I'm ready to get on the team. You know, and so I just want you to start communicating the why a little bit differently. You can't communicate Growth Track and Dream Team because you need more servants. You know what I'm saying? No, it really has to be that way. So what we do is we encourage everybody in our church to go through a 4-Sunday growth track. Now, there's not a magic to that number. If you need 10 weeks, do 10 weeks. If you can do it in one class, do it in one class. That part doesn't matter. When we sat down and said, what would it take for a person to actually find their spiritual gift? Remember, it's a discover purpose system. What is actually needed? We thought there were 4 things that were all needed. And I'm going to tell you what those 4 things are, but you don't have to do these 4. You just have to get the same result that we're getting. Again, the goal, it's going to be measured by, did they discover their purpose and get on a team? So that's what you have to create. Go home to your church and say, we need a set of systems. We need a class. We need an event. We need something that people can discover their purpose and get on a team. Now, whatever that works for you, again, if it works, it's the right way. Our way is I need 4 classes. 2 of them are all teaching. 2 of them are labs, meaning they're discussion and working through. The first one's a teaching, and it's our first step. We just call it, for simplicity's sake, it has no name. We call it step 1. I'm a big believer, by the way, in not putting brands on things that nobody else understands. So you don't call your youth service a youth service. You call it Ignite. So a person comes in, and all they hear is, well, Ignite's Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, so all you Igniters, you need to come to Tuesday o'clock. You know, and like, so the new purpose is going, what's Ignite? Because you got to, I don't mind it being branded, but don't forget to say what it really is to people. So be careful in your branding that you don't take away the thing, and it's all confusing to the outsider. We got a lot of insider language in churches. You know that, right? So just be careful with that. So we call our first step, step 1. Just saying, okay? Okay, just thought that might be a good name for it. And in that step 1, I teach it, and I taught it live for 11 years till our church was well over 15,000 people. So just for somebody asked, you know, give us the scalable version. Well, I did it in a home because we didn't have a building. We were portable for 6 years. We did it on Sunday night. People came, and I shared the vision of our church. I shared the 4 things that if you come to this church, we're going to help you know God, find freedom, discover purpose, and to make a difference. I explained our systems, why weekend services attract lost people, why we have small groups, why there's a growth track, and why there's a dream team. I gave a few minutes on our doctrine. Just let me tell you what kind of church we are, what we believe in. I gave a few minutes on our government. This is what, you know, this is who I answer to. Who's here? Here's how things are governed around here. Because if you're going to join this church, you need to know what it's all about. And then I get the action step after step 1 is join the church. Join the church. So we actually have membership. Our membership doesn't have any governmental power. We're not a congregational rule. So it's just in heart, but they actually join the church. But it's not like they, you know, it's not like they have a special status from anybody else who comes. It's just in the heart. They've decided this is going to be my home church. But that's the purpose of step 1. Step 2 for us is a lab, meaning I do 10 minutes on video just to set up the class. And then our hosts lead people through a gift and personality assessment. So if there was a single word to describe step 1, that word would be membership. If there's a single word that would describe step 2, it's the word discover. If you're gonna do something, remember, we're trying to get to Dream Team. So now I've got to help them discover their uniqueness. I personally believe design reveals destiny. How you're made will point to what you're supposed to do. So what you love, there's something in that. God did that. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. And God put his purposes on the inside. Like I could do it right now at this table. If I say, close your eyes and see yourself ministering to somebody. And then I ask you, I want you to see yourself ministering to somebody. And then I ask these questions. Was it a group or was it a person? And one person will say, oh, I saw myself in front of this large crowd. The next person will say, oh, I saw myself with one person. See, you're already narrowing down just by how they see. Because we all see the same thing. We all see it differently based on our gifts and personality, the way God made us. Then I'll say, are they lost or are they saved? And one person will say, oh, man, they're saved. I love equipping church people and helping them understand the Bible. The next person says, no, man, I care about the hurting person. And only God can do that. Are you following what I'm saying, everybody? And you start digging into the depths of how they see things. And now, because I want to move them based on their design to their, it's their charis, it's their spiritual gift to doing something significant for God. So the action step of step two is just discover your God-given design. Discover it. I want you to leave there going, wow, I understand how God's made me. Now I know why I care about that person who's hungry. Now I know why, and we help them discover that. The third one is the class again. Our third step on the third Sunday is the class again. And if there's a single word to describe it, it would be the word leadership. And what I'm trying to do in this is redefine the word. A leader's not the person in charge. To use John Maxwell's definition, leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less. So where do you want to influence? And if you're going to be an influencer, if you're going to influence people behind a camera or on a guitar or in a parking lot or in a nursery room or leading a small group, you need to understand what God expects of those of us who are leading. And that's when we get into more the depth of your character, how you live. Your personality. I think that's what I'm going to preach on tomorrow, by the way, is I believe God has given us the faces, literally the face. The Bible says in 2 Corinthians that we're to be transformed into his likeness with an ever-increasing glory. In other words, we're supposed to reflect what Jesus looks like. And so in this class, I teach them, here's how you need to reflect the likeness of God so that when you sing on a stage or whether you hold a baby, or whatever you do in this world that you're gonna find next week, which is the final step, you need to do it with the likeness of Jesus, and we teach them leadership. So it's a beautiful step. And so and we say the action step is to prepare to get on the dream team. And that's where, we ask them to sign a leadership honor code. And we ask them to sign up on the statement of faith because they're making decisions of, I'm an influencer now, that's who I am. I'm not a leader in the I'm in charge sense, I'm a leader in that I'm an influencer sense. And then the final step, if there's a single word that describes step four for us, it's the word serve. So you join, you hear vision and you join, you discover your design, you get an understanding of leadership, and now we serve. And this turns into a lab again. So only 10 minutes of, hey, welcome, but in this room right now, and sometimes our step four is about as big as what's in this room right now, we would say there are 31 different places you can serve at Church of the Highlands. Here's the list, and we put them on the screen. Now go get in a huddle with one of those leaders. So there's a parking huddle over here, and a nursery huddle, and a children's huddle, and a worship huddle, and an usher huddle, and a greeter huddle, and a prayer huddle, and a small group leader huddle. And they just pick a place that they think they want, based on what they've learned in the previous weeks, that they're going to go as they first serve, go check it out. And it's there in that huddle that leader tells them, hey, if you've chosen worship, for instance, let me tell you now what that looks like. And for us, by the way, it's 7 more months of training before they can get on a stage. So if it was an usher, they might say, hey, join us next Sunday and help us ush, right? You know what I'm saying? So I don't know if that's a word, but I just made it up, right? So depending on what they choose determines how much longer their training is. So if it's children, they may have a little bit more training that they'll do, but all those leaders give them the first layer of training. Let's go ahead and get started, and then they start the process depending on what they've chosen to get involved, and that's how we're assimilating so many people into leadership and into what we call the dream team in our church. And honestly, it's been a beautiful, beautiful thing. And in this, I'll give you a few more thoughts, and we'll do some Q&A. But as they attend the ministry, They get the original orientation of that ministry in step four. So they're going to get the orientation of it. For some of them, the orientation is the training. Again, if they're going to park cars, they can do the whole training at the orientation. They can start next Sunday. But again, if they've chosen worship or something like that, it may take more weeks for them to get involved in. It's at that place that that ministry leader of that area, that team leader of that particular ministry area gets information from them, all this about these, you know, the it's the paperwork. It's the, let us know who you are, and make, we pick up all these forms that they prepared the week before, and then we always, this is a key thing, we always set up a one-on-one time with them to ask them personal. So they're in the little huddle. Maybe my parking huddle had 8 people in it, and it's there. We actually set up with either with a pastor or with that ministry leader, hey, let's just get together. Let's find a time just to talk. And that's where we're going to ask about their marriage and ask about their life. And that's where I actually want the spiritual gift of the discerning of spirits to be in operation. So that, because a serial killer could go through all of our classes. There has to be a place where you look a person in the eye. And I'm going to tell you, the Holy Spirit will show up and say, and there's been times where we say, you know what? Yes, but not now. Because you know your marriage is... Let's spend a semester or two. In fact, why don't you go through Freedom with your wife, and let's just work. I mean, I love the fact that you want to serve right now, but I think it'd be best if you just kind of really work on your marriage right now. Let's get this worked out. And you see what I'm saying, everybody? Now we're pastoring them, and we found that one-on-one spot of before we let them on teams, that we're looking them in the eye and really hearing about their hearts and their lives, has been an important ingredient before you're letting somebody into your system and into serving. Sometime, by the way, if they're messed up and have a lot of issues, it's still okay for them. You know, come serve. It's okay. You can park a car and have a bad marriage, but let's work on your marriage. And let's still, hey, I'll go to this group with you. There's this great curriculum here, and man, I'll get together with you. And that's where we're really pastoring people in this step into the dream team. Anyway, it's an important part of the process. And then honestly, the way I see it is that at that point, man, I'm supporting these dream teamers, we call them, as best I can. They have their own locker room, so to speak, a place where they can come in and have refreshments that's only open to dream teamers. They're building it in the new building here at Life, a Dream Team Central, we call it, a place where there's lockers in there if they want to store their goods because they're staying for multiple services sometimes, and they can get refreshments and they can check in. They have a barcode where they can let us know they're here and they're checking in, and so we can keep up with who's serving when. Anyway, it's been a great way to support them. And then we have, last thing is that we have a big party every year for Dream Teamers. And I mean, it's the party of all parties. We spend a lot of money. I bring in entertainment. I've had comedians come in, Christian comedians come in. We have food we give them gifts. We every year we make a brand new Dream Team shirt that everybody gets, and we just give it to them. And I've only had one person in the history of all these years of doing these parties that came up to me and said, Pastor Chris, he kind of did the math. Pastor Chris, this sure is a whole lot of money we're spending, you know, just on one party for one night. And I said, sir, you do realize I'm getting about 20,000 free workers for about the salary of one. He said, you're the smartest man I ever met in my whole life. So, so don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Yeah, seriously. I mean, he was complaining about that, but these are staff. I'm not hiring. Man, put it back into them and bless them and just care for them and get them together. And we have leaders summits, and we have team nights sometimes throughout the year. And I'll just gather all the dream teams together when I have something to say and support them and strengthen them. And they're getting discipled in their own team groups as well. And many of them actually have their small group is connected to their dream team serve. So if like in worship, a lot of the worship world, they'll practice and then they break out in small groups. So they're getting kind of team and group in the same thing. They don't have to, but they can. So that's why it's working so well for us. And there's so much more I could say to help you guys with, but I'll let you have the balance of the time. Pastor Paul, I'll call you on back up for the moderation of this part of our gathering. So yes, sir. Yep.
So well. You know, I was thinking, again, what you said at the end of the year, by creating an environment where people are really thanked and something special is given. I think sometimes we can say thank you, but thank you needs to be said and felt. We like you, we have so many people giving so much, and every year we have a real focused time where we do something special for them. And I think it's an amazing thing how that is so appreciated. And it's kind of like those that are really in it don't even want it. But there's something about when you feel thanked that engenders a whole new sense. A lot of leaders have, a lot of churches have high volume turnover because it's just demand, rather than that thank you. Some great stuff there. Really, really, really good stuff. Some questions? Great opportunity. We've got a few minutes to do that. Yes. So the question is, the four-step process, is there a way that kids and youth can go through that as well, so it's not just an adult thing?
So the answer is absolutely.
Yep.
So we have everything we do as adults, we put it both into kids' world and to student world. In fact, on Sundays, during the service, our services are about 70, 75 minutes is how long our service is. For the kids, half of that will be the large group setting, where it's stage-driven, worship, a lesson, and then the second half of it is in small groups. So they all sit in huddles by gender and by age, in little circles, and we hear prayer requests, and the goal is we want every kid to say something every Sunday. Let me tell you what's going on in my life. I need prayer for this. And so we're teaching them that transparency and honesty in a relational setting. And I maintain the best part of our children's church world is not the stage lesson, and it's that moment where we sit down by gender and by age, and then we teach the growth track to our kids. So we have lessons. The lessons that happen on stage, they're discovering their design, and we get them serving. And so the kids actually serve in their own children's church setting in the same place. Same thing with our students. I actually have a theory that student ministry does not need to look like what it's been looking like over the past. For the past 50 years, youth ministry, the current youth ministry movement's only about 50 years old, where basically gave the students their own meeting. But the reason why that started is because church stunk. Well, now, in my opinion, church relates better to kids than it does to the adults. And so I've actually become the biggest competition to our student ministry. So we had a separate youth service, and they weren't going. They were staying in with me. But honestly, our message, light, smoke, and everything was better than what they were producing over there. Like, church is better. You understand what I'm saying? It's better. So we actually decided we weren't going to build a youth ministry around a youth service anymore. We were going to build it on get them in groups and get them on teams. And so the only thing I even measure our student ministry leaders is how many of our students are in groups and how many are you turning into leaders and getting on the dream team. And they have a meeting once a month, and I don't even think that one's is that important. I let them do it because they beg for it, okay? But they do it, and I say, you can do it if it stays real evangelistic, and it is. So we do one youth service on the second Wednesday of every month. They call it motion night, all right? So that's what they do. But really, I'm only measuring them by are their students in groups and their own teams. And actually, the highest level of participation in our church in groups and on teams is among our young people. And so I really believe in it. So thank you for asking. I think it's a great question. Yeah.
That's a great question. Even our team now got a whole leadership development program for children. So they're identifying the kids that have got a real strong leadership gift, and they come in and they are training to be leaders, and they need an area where they are leading as kids. And it's a great, great thought. Rather than if you have a babysitting club, you'll always have trouble. You know, and so that's the way of the kingdom, young and old. Yeah, great. Somebody else's hand. Yeah, sir. Good question. So the question for everybody and those joining us is if in a smaller context, when you do next steps, you get to the end of the four steps and now there are all these areas to serve. You can't have everybody in the room. so that they can have a direct point of contact. What's a great way or another way for us to address
that? So again, we had to deal with it at that size as well. Two comments. Number one, I would say keep doing it no matter how many show up. I'm telling you, if you'll just keep having these classes. And so we would do these four. We've done them on days where people said nobody will show up. Like Super Bowl Sunday's a big day. Like they're not going to come to the class. And the class is full every time. So it's we keep doing it no matter what. The consistency, it's the flywheel. If you ever read Jim Collins' concept of the flywheel, the more you pull it, there's a moment where it takes off. And you'll see that. All right. So just keep the consistency of offering these, no matter how many's in it. And we had it where there was 5, 10, 12 people in it. But absolutely, you wouldn't have 31 people there, you know, going after these 10 people. You have just one. You can have one person representing all those areas at that size and just say, here are the places. And it doesn't have to be 31. It could be, here are 15 places, 12 places you can get involved in church life. Pick one. You don't even have to be right about it. If you don't like it, you can switch. But start somewhere. And don't let them leave until they, just pick one. You don't have to be right about it. If you don't like it, change. But start, God can't steer you if you're standing still. Just move towards something and God will go, all right, this way. And then he goes that way. It's okay. But God cannot steer someone that's standing still. So we just say, move towards something. And so encourage them to take those steps. Just don't make them have the feeling that it's permanent. You signed up. You better show up now. No, you know, let them figure it out. But that's how I would encourage that. Does that answer the question? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we have people sign up to be a part of teams, you know, they're not signing a contract or anything toward it, but they're letting us know they're going to take the next steps toward whatever the training is. So whatever they've chosen, again, all the training varies based on what they've chosen. And we would just probably say if they chose small groups, well, we'll let you know the next training for small group leaders is here. I'll let the small group team know that you signed up for this. And then that team would contact them back directly. Or if they chose parking, just let you know, somebody from our parking team, one of our coaches, is going to contact you. I'll give them your phone number, and they'll work out the details for you guys to get together for your training there. And just more make it more organic to a person than to, you know what I'm saying? Then yeah, that's perfect. Okay, cool.
Yeah, and I think when the church is smaller, exactly that I was going to say, that is, why wouldn't you have the full list and say, before we go, we're all going to choose one or three of these things, and then we'll get that leader to give you a call, tell you about what can be accomplished through that and what it requires. Or you put a little brochure together, the selling points of each of those ministries and the requirements of time within that ministry. But before we go, while it's hot, make a decision. And then give it a go for 3 months. But I think as a smaller church, you can get, because everybody's looking for people to release as well, get them to give them a call. And then do it. Make sure they do it. The worst thing in the world is promising and underperforming. Or somebody ringing them up and just, you know, stuffing people around. It's kind of like, no, if we're committed to it, let's do it. It's great. Did you have your hand up? Yeah. Hey, Andrew. That's a good question. The question is, where do you start if you've been running certain ways and then you see what's happening through Grow and you really feel that's a thing for us as a church to do? One of the leadership principles I live by is you paint the picture before you tell the story. So as a good leader, you just don't introduce things that people have no idea about. You get them seeing it before you start telling it. And so, again, I would utilize messages. I'd get key componentry. I would also always say change happens from the core outside. Get those closest to you, really understanding why and what for, and then work it through. And then you sort of say, wouldn't it be great if we could see that happen? Well, yeah, that would be great. Well, I'm not sure that's all happening the way we're doing it. So what have we thought about this? And so bring people on a pathway. Big churches, I think people have often said that they're not a plane that darts all around. It's a jumbo jet. So you just can't jerk it like that. Or if churches have been entrenched for a long time, you have to be committed to change, but you don't want to tear it. So therefore, you could bring some understanding, and this is what we can see. And let's have, if you hear about Grow and you say, wow, that's amazing. Well, there's this mega church in America doing this thing. No, let's go have a look-see. People go, we took our team for many years to Hillsong Conference, and we still take people there. It's amazing how they thought what we were asking was too much till they saw the servant heart of the people. And they all came back going, well, we can lift our game, because they saw it. And I think that's the key to transition. And as a leader, the danger of leadership is you see something, oh, that's a quick fix, and then you're shooting off, but you got no revelation about it. And so when it doesn't work, you change course again. And before the people know, you've lost all your trust points. You know, you need a trust quota to bring effective change. But work hard at being very clear about where you're going, and then get the best exposure before you start implementing. That's what I'd do. Yeah, right on the far side. So the question is, with the expectations of what it is to run a group, if you are running a ministry expression or a team expression in the church, is the expectations the same?
So we, in the perfect world, we would want people to have that same experience that they have in small groups on their teams. So we would want that team leader caring for them at that level too, giving them encouragement, giving them scripture, giving them prayer, and helping them take next steps. And for many of our service teams, they have formed into small groups. So, I mean, probably our closest, almost cliquish group of people in our church is our parking team. They have picnics together. I'm blown away how close they are. But I don't require it in everyone, because some people just want to serve on Sunday. They just want to help out, but they want to go to a parenting curriculum so their usher group cannot give them that curriculum. So you can't ever put it into a, no, they have to be both in the same. So there are going to be people who just want to worship one, serve one. That's how we say it at our church. We want everybody to worship one, serve one. Just be involved. It's okay. Be involved. But many of them are having their small group expression somewhere else. But for the sake of time, like for the service areas that require time, like worship teams. So they're not only serving on a Sunday, but they've got to practice as well. That's where you would actually want to urge them, like, hey, don't even take yet now a third night away from your family. Let's go ahead and find some time at this rehearsal night, and y'all break up into groups and have the small group dynamic. So there's a lot of working through all that, but absolutely, I love your question. Because yes, we had that expectation even into our serving areas that we're looking after each other, we're praying for one another, encouraging each other. And they would, at the very least, if their group is not in their service area, that person's asking them, are you in a group? And making sure everyone is. So yeah, great question, great catch.
Yeah, and my experience would be when churches are young, there's not a whole lot of demand. They begin to grow, and then we've got all of these things we're expecting people to be at. And the key of growing momentum is taking that as a leader and making it very achievable for every individual. So we went through the same thing. Oh, well, groups are our big thing. We designed it. This is many years ago. This is how it'll work for everybody. And yeah, if you're on stage, obviously you got to be in a group. So you got to go to a group. You got to do the practice night. You got to do the special events and all that's that. And then you got to sing on Sunday. And it's like, we just can't live. So why wouldn't we move groups to the setting in busy areas? And same with our leadership development. Let's not just have our big leaders night. Let's do as much as we can on the one night rather than people coming up to three nights, because we can speak a whole lot less and be a whole lot more effective if we just think about it a little more, which is a big thing with growing ministries, is to keep it simple and not more and more demand. Really. Yep. Up in the back, yeah. So the question is, are you intentional?
Yeah, that might be the understatement of the year, yeah.
In how you preach on Sunday, because you can have the system, but then if you want to bring it in, so you're teaching on Sunday, what's some of the keys to that?
So I do think that every sermon can actually fall under, is this sermon intended to be evangelistic? Is it intended to pastor people? Is it intended to actually grow people or encourage people to take, you know, to do something with their life that matters? I think every sermon falls under one of those four categories, and I absolutely make sure that the preaching diet that they're going to get from me in a calendar year is going to reflect all four of those things. I'm making the decisions, by the way, based on when visitors. So now we have 17 years of charting when visitors come and don't come. And there are peaks and valleys that overlap, whether we were 200 people or 20,000 or whatever. I mean, it's the same. It's funny how the peaks and valleys are in the same place when visitors show up. So, as you can imagine, the more evangelistic messages are when we have the peaks, and the more pastoral when we have the valleys, you know, of those. So I'm even tracking the calendar year to help me even know what type of messages that they need in those settings. So, yeah, absolutely, there's intentionality in all of that, because I think it's a responsibility to lead and feed. That's what I'm to lead them and I'm to feed them. And that's the two things that I'm just constantly, I'm going to stand before God one day and I've shepherded them with integrity of heart, and I've shepherded them with intentionality and just making sure that they have that balanced diet. So yeah, absolutely. I think it's really important to focus on that.
That's great. I wouldn't have picked you for an intentional man.
Yeah, you know. I'm working on it.
In fact, I didn't even know we were racing when we were in the cars. And we did go
past
that.
And you sure did speed up really fast at odd moments. That's all I got to say.
It's because we were going to our new building to pray for it before we came here, just on the way through. And yeah, I would add too, don't forget, as a leader, that one of the art forms is, what's the context of what I'm delivering? So you have the revelation. On Sunday, let's make sure it's palatable for Sunday people. If I have a meeting with we have a key influencers team of about 27 on staff people. I think the last time I did it, the time before, I came in and I said, guys, today I don't have time to warm anyone up. We should not be at that level where I have to make you feel good before I can bring what I want to bring. Because we're on the front line and away we go. We don't have to do that. But it's no good taking the same approach to volunteer leaders and then the same approach that the volunteer leaders get on Sunday. So that's where intentionality and wise thinking as a leader is, where are they at? We're not going to water it down, but we're going to do it in a way that's attractive and can be processed in that setting. Great. Couple more? Yeah. Working with young families, and how do you manage getting them into groups and for them to be able to do different groups that they feel are pertinent to their situation, and they'd love to be in that.
Yeah, so everybody has to just adjust in their season of life. And I think we have to accommodate that. So one of my favorite lines to say to our people is, don't stop doing what you're doing to come do what we're doing. Let me take what you're already doing and help you turn it into ministry. So if you're at a station in life, a season of life where, I mean, you have kids, then just pick something around that. If that's how busy you are, if you don't have another evening, that's perhaps you need to. We're all going to eat lunch. They're all still doing that. They find time for that. So maybe your group needs to be around lunch, and you get together with some other ladies who are raising kids together. And we're not going to take an evening away from our family because we're going to do a lunch type group. And so I think we have to provide them. That's why I did that lunch group with those men that I talked about, where we just asked the condition of their soul, because none of them had another evening to give away. And so, but they were all going to eat lunch. You know, you can look at me and tell me I haven't missed any of those. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, so they, and so you have to just take it into the seasons of life wherever you are. I disciple a lot of young people early in the morning, just get together with them because they have to go off to college, university, and just they're busy all day and they don't have evenings. So we just found the time for it. And just, you know, so everyone, it is workable. And if you have kids, small kids, then it probably want to be with other couples who have small kids. And they've worked out, you know, a sitter in a back bedroom or something perhaps, or just whatever, you know, or have meetings. A lot of the ladies have meetings when the kids are off to school and they're done. You know, they'll do like an afternoon tea, kind of a prayer time. So again, it's just for us. I think the best thing we can do is just share with them. Because what happens is people create boxes of what they think groups is. And they think it's another night with a set of curriculum and it looks like this. And I think you need to open up the world of possibilities. Okay, because there are a bunch of them. That help? Okay, cool.
Well, one thing we did with parents, exactly, with young children at one time, it's kind of they all put in $2 for when they met together, and we paid one of the college kids to come in, or a couple of them, to look after them, and they just loved it. or there's a special course coming up on parenting for 10 weeks, we're going to put on childcare for you. And so we'll make that available. So we think outside the box. I was out at a coffee shop recently, and there's a whole row of mums with kids on a table having a coffee. And I thought, what a brilliant thing. They're all wanting encouragement, talking about their babies. Well, that's the sort of groups that can happen in our foyers.
And they're already grouping.
Yeah.
So everybody in your church is already in a group.
Grouping somewhere, yeah.
They're just not yours. So you're just going to, so don't make them stop doing, they're already grouping, I promise you. They are gathering somewhere with some friends somewhere. So don't ask them to stop doing that. Help them to take that and be more intentional with it. All right, yes, yeah, so that's, they're so already doing it.
On Sunday, we showed a video of a guy called Monty, which you loved, and he's came to us from another church, him and his family. They knew people in our church, went to Next Steps, had made a decision, we just want to sit in the back row, but went to Next Steps, and by the end of it, somebody found out that Monty, on the odd occasion, goes into old people's homes and brings worship. So they just said, would you lead something like that? We can put some, now people are with Monty leading, you know, how great thou art or whatever in the old people's homes. And I think that's amazing because we need that. I mean, Marie and I are getting older, and so to have some great worship is just, you know, getting prepared for that. It's going to be fantastic.
They come over every week, huh?
Yeah, they come over every week. You can come as well if you like, Chris.
Sure. I'm getting close.
All right. One more. Yeah. Yeah, good question. So for us here at Life, we made this a switch, a big change over the last 3 years. I think what made it, I'm naturally somebody that keeps on looking at things and never, I'm thankful, but I never arrive. And I think you have to be secure enough to go, there's always something better. There is always a next step. There is always something. And so what are we? I mean, I'm classic Pentecostal. I grew up when it comes to altar call, just turn the aircon on, off, turn the heat up. Hell's, you know, if you go out tonight. You know, if somebody didn't get you, a deacon will drive you over. It's kind of like you're going to make a decision. And it's kind of like, we're always in this process. And then we ask the question of, okay, what's the why behind this? How is that working? And we became convinced in our own heart that we needed to make a shift because that's why I love it. It doesn't all have to be new. I think you're so good at that. It's kind of, there's a revelation in the body of Christ for different things. Yeah. You know, yeah, let's make it work in our culture, but let's not try to change it. Insecurity is a big thing. Yeah. Come on, as a leader, we don't have to come up with all the ideas. Yeah. And by the way, we shouldn't be doing everything we're doing either. We should be doing what God's given us to do, but learn from that. And so we committed. How do we commit? We send teams over there. We talk to other people. I mean, we've been in Joel and Ellen's life and seeing what they're doing, and that was inspirational and all sorts of things. And we may have helped them in some things, but collectively, we've just said, no, we're not going to allow the insecurity of the people or the fact that patterns have been there a long time. Oh, we don't want to keep changing. Yes, we do want to keep changing. And I think Pastor Chris touched on this. You talk about faithfulness. Faithfulness has to be loyalty and fruitfulness. If it's not fruitful, it's not faithful. And we've just put loyalty into the bracket of faithfulness. But the one with one talent, you could argue, was loyal. I protected what you gave me and I returned it. And God said, that's not me. And it's pretty challenging. So we live with that. We never, never arrive. It's just always. And yet we're not just changing. Our vision is still the same, but we've created a culture that we're up for. If it's going to be a better way, we're going to look at it. We're going to talk about it, paint the picture, and then we're going to go there. Awesome. Can we thank Pastor Chris for that? Thanks, buddy. It's great.